In November 1964, after a resounding White House victory, it was time for a confident Johnson administration to change the guard. According to records from that time, a Johnson administration official asked one of his subordinates to explain the standing policy on how to fire an employee, say, when we're certain that the employee is homosexual. Can you imagine how many lawyers would take that case today? Well, the memo that came back in response back in 1964, and that was just a few months after the Civil Rights Act was signed, said this: because of the, quote, revulsion which homosexuality inspires in the normal person, it was common practice to, quote, lean over backwards to rule against a homosexual. Charles Francis, president of the Mattachine Society of Washington, obtained that memo and others through public record requests. Charles Francis joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you, John.
So, Charles, what do these memos show a pattern of in Washington, D.C. in 1964 and really for quite a while afterwards?
Well, they show a pattern of really disturbing animus. This memo talking about revulsion is really sort of drenched in bigotry and homophobia behind the scenes. This memo wasn't meant to be read by outsiders. It was an internal communication inside saying, what do we do with gays that we don't know if they're rehabilitated or not?
And according to your investigation, it really stuck around. That memo had some force of authority for as much as a decade.
Yeah, a decade and beyond. It was the philosophy that gays were immoral and what they said unsuitable for federal employment because of the revulsion factor and also the problem of having people work with a known deviant. And this is the kind of stuff we're finding inside the National Archives.
And explain the origins of the name Mattachine Society of Washington. It really goes back to the early history of gay activism.
Yeah, it does. In 1951, a guy named Harry Hay formed the original Mattachine Society. And they used that word Mattachine because it referred to the masked court jesters in medieval times that would have to wear a mask in order to speak truth to the king. So they adopted that in the old days. And in 1961, Frank Kameny, the civil rights pioneer here in Washington, D.C., started his own Mattachine Society of Washington to make his case for gay civil equality for decades here in Washington.
In this National Archives investigation, have you found memos like this and this level of bigotry at all levels in the government, Congress, the FBI?
Yeah, yes, we do. We found a whole series of memoranda put out and pushed by J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the FBI, and this was called his Sex Deviates Program. And these memoranda show Hoover having plants in every branch of the government, in every government office, reporting back to him and the FBI who were the suspected deviates so that they could investigate these deviates and fire them. And we also found that J. Edgar Hoover had a sex deviate contact inside the Supreme Court building itself to report back to him on suspected deviates in the judiciary.
And, you know, part of this smacks of just pure intolerance and bigotry, and part of it is a set of obsessions that's associated with the culture of the 1950s and 60s. It's sort of two different dynamics here.
Yeah, it is. It arose out of conflating gay Americans with treason or disloyalty, and that triggered President Eisenhower to signing an executive order. It was called Executive Order 10450, which was a cataclysm for gay Americans, gay and lesbian Americans, for decades to come because it put the word sexual perversion in the government security regulations. It was part of a gay sex panic and a communist panic in the country right after World War II.
You know, the language of these memos is really astounding. The memo that we referred to in the introduction to this segment also includes the homespun theory, once a homo, always a homo, speaking about employees and how they're to be dealt with, referencing this rehabilitation idea that you talked about.
Yeah, it was a very old school insult, once a homo, always a homo. And it's really exciting, actually, that we find this kind of stuff so that we can point out to people that this discrimination goes way back. It's rooted in bigotry, and we're dealing with it even today with this non-discrimination proposal for federal contractors. People are asking President Obama to sign an executive order now to put an end to this once a homo, always a homo mindset that's existed in the federal government for too long.
Is it possible that eventually, when you get to the end of this investigation, that the National Archives will also tell the story of how this changed, of how this bigotry was put aside and actual protections were put in place in the workplace?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. At our event last night at the McDermott Law Firm, David Ferriero, the archivist himself, the head of the National Archives, talked about how they were moving forward to develop a system-wide gay finding aid to index and help us find these stories and this information at the archives. And you got to realize they also run the 17 presidential libraries. So everything from the Reagan to the Clinton to the Bush to the Harry Truman, all of these presidential libraries have tremendous resources to search for this kind of history, the long-deleted gay political history of our country.
Charles Francis is president of the Mattachine Society of Washington, D.C., searching through the archives to tell a story of social change in the United States. Thank you so much, Charles.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.